Tom Mascheri was known as the Mad Russian during his 10 seasons in the NBA. The 6'6" power forward led the league in personal fouls in 1962, his second season with the then San Francisco Warriors. In 1967, he was selected in the expansion draft by the Supersonics, and he finished his career with 4 seasons in Seattle. But all those numbers from Tom Mascheri's days in the NBA are quite possibly the least interesting things about him. He tells us his story in his own words.
I never felt that poetry was somehow not masculine. My father used to love to recite some of the Russian great epic poems. And my mother was always talking about literature, and she wrote poetry herself. My grandmother was a Tolstoy. They were a very large family, and it included good old War and Peace, Leo Tolstoy. I was born in Harbin, Manchuria. It was the final destination of many white Russians who were escaping the Bolsheviks. My mother arrived there via the Siberian Railroad. My father arrived there via the White Russian Army, being pushed back and back and back by Trotsky's guerrillas, or partisans as they were called. And they named me Tomislav Nikolaevich Mesheryakov. My mother, because she was working for the American consulate, had wangled a visa for my dad. She convinced him that he should go ahead of us to San Francisco, get a job, and send for us. Unfortunately, as we left, we were actually on the boat, already on the ship, when the war broke out on December 7th, 1941.
A date which will live in infamy.
We were taken by the Japanese to a women and children's camp in Tokyo. And we spent the rest of the war there.
Of the Empire of Japan.
We would look out the window at the bombs dropping and the flak exploding in the air. Oh, it was scary. It was very scary. My mother was terribly frightened. I learned almost every Catholic prayer and Protestant prayer because everybody was praying. We were reunited via the Red Cross, so my father was waiting for us in San Francisco, but I hadn't seen him. I had no idea who he was. You know, my mother showed me one photograph, but he was in a uniform, and he looked extremely handsome, and he was, and I actually went to the wrong person, and I had to be dragged away from somebody I thought was my father, but it wasn't my father. I mean, I remember him hugging me, and he wasn't a very emotional man. And so when I think back on that, that might have been maybe one of two hugs I got from my father in my entire life. So I have to think back on that with good spirit. I hated being a foreigner. My mother sent me off to elementary school the first day in short pants, came home crying because the kids were mean towards me. I had a very thick accent, and I didn't speak English very well. There was a lot of, you know, commie and better dead than red, and I just thought, well, you know, I needed to be an American. So I had been reasonably tortured from the third grade to the sixth grade. I remember, this is a very clear image in my mind, playing kickball, and I was up at the plate, and I kicked the ball, and I kicked the ball so damn far that it went over the fence, the elementary school fence, and out onto Pacific Avenue. That was a good long kick. You know, I ran around the bases and came home, and some of the kids were slapping me on the back, and all of a sudden I realized everything had changed. And it had changed because of athletics. It had changed because I had done something that they respected. And from that point on, I worked very hard to be an athlete. It was 1961, and 1961 was kind of a turning point. All of a sudden, the NBA was starting to become much more substantial, much more of a national entity. When the draft came up, I was drafted number one by the Philadelphia Warriors. You know, my father, I think he was sort of amazed that they would pay a human being to bounce a ball and wear shorts and run up and down the court. He sort of thought it was maybe a little not manly enough. I think he probably would have preferred my being a poet than a basketball player, frankly, because poetry was revered. It was considered very Russian. After my first year with Philadelphia, I was going to be drafted if I didn't join the reserves. So I joined the Army Reserve, and I had to go to basic training, and then I had to go to military school of some sort. So it was a six-month deal. One of the sergeants who knew I played ball came in. I was sleeping, and he nudged me, put a flashlight in my face. He says, "Your team's just been sold to San Francisco." I jumped out of the bunk. I was so elated. Yeah, I went home to San Francisco. We were the San Francisco Warriors. We played in the Cow Palace and the City Center to crowds of maybe 3,000 or 4,000. But we were home. I had a temper, I admit, and I wasn't about to back down. And maybe that was sort of the immigrant in me, come to think of it. You know, I had to put up my dukes a lot when I was young. So I think I had a little bit of a short fuse. I was in Seattle, and I'm not even sure if I realized it was Wilt at the time, but somebody hit me with an elbow. And so I went after that person, and it was Wilt. But I wasn't about to back off, so I started swinging. And this is like right out of a comic book. Wilt stretched out his arm, put his palm on my forehead, and as I swung, of course, I couldn't reach him. Here I'm swinging at air, and Wilt is laughing at me, and he's saying, "Come on, Tommy, come on, Tommy." It made me look like a fool, I can tell you that. It's very hard for me sometimes to describe Wilt, because he was so much bigger than life, and one of the sweetest guys, the most misunderstood guy in the history of basketball. When he finally died, I just couldn't believe it. I just didn't think he'd ever die. I mean, a guy that big, 7 foot, you know, he said he was 7 feet, but he was 7'1". I wrote a poem about Wilt's death, and the poem goes like this. Morning, Wilt. This morning, I woke up thinking big. Time to crack a dozen eggs, fry all the bacon. I think I'll never shave. Let my beard grow as long as an epic. Dust off those books with thick spines. Gibbon's Rise and Fall, Gone with the Wind, the Summa Theologica. Spend the afternoon with Aquinas' 5 proofs of God's existence. The uncaused cause, or was it the divine plan that toppled Wilt? It might help reading about the prime mover, but I doubt it. Words are never enough. Let the day end as it began with a red sun, and let there be a blonde soprano with big bosoms belting out her last aria. We're coming to poetry part of my life?
We are coming to poetry. That is what it's
happening. Okay, all right. We're coming to poetry. That actually begins in Seattle as a player. A poet by the name of Mark Strand, who was one of the poet laureates of the United States, came to the University of Washington, and he was part of a poker group that I was playing poker with. And he said, "Well, if you're really interested in poetry, why don't you come in and sit in some of my classes when you're in town," which I did. And it just blew me away. You know, if you're a basketball player and a professional athlete, it's such a rush. Then all of a sudden you're through. And now where does that rush come from? There were a couple of times when I just sat around the house being very depressed. So what actually saved me is poetry. To pick up a little extra cash, I went and worked with poetry in the schools. Through that experience, I realized, hey, I really like working with kids. So I was really working very hard to be the best teacher I could be. Basketball didn't interest me as much. I taught high school English for 24 years. So I actually am more a teacher than I am a basketball player. I retired in 2005, and in 2006, very early on in January, I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. It's a form of blood cancer, white cell blood cancer, incurable. I was frightened. I was very frightened, but there were options, and I went into remission. Then I asked the doctor, "Well, what's the next step?" The doctor said a transplant, a white blood cell transplant. So I had the transplant. And when I was recovering, I had to stay isolated in my house. And so I was there by myself watching NBA. And so I all of a sudden became a fan again. And I've been a fan ever since, and even more so. I'm a fan of the Golden State Warriors, or the Dubs, as they're known. Now, my number has been retired by the Warriors, and it hangs in the rafters along with Wilt's. And it's nice to be there and to feel welcome. I've been in remission now for 10 years, and I've long ago stopped thinking of years, and I think only in terms of months. I like months. I don't like days because that sounds sort of, you know, a little too spiritual. And weeks, it doesn't sound substantial. But months are good, you know. I can do a lot of stuff in a month.
That's teacher, poet, and former NBA player Tom Mascheri. Our story was produced by Only a Game's Karen Given and created in collaboration with Sports Illustrated's Where Are They Now issue, available now at si.com/WATN.